I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to episode 2 of season 3 of the Savage Pads Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle, and as we all know, it's Arkansas week. The countdown to Georgia football is quickly coming to a close, and we've got senior ESPN writer and New York Times best-selling author Mark Schlabaugh with us to discuss the 2020 college football landscape, as well as his recently published season predictions that include Georgia in the 2020 college football playoff. Then, frequent guest of the show, former Tennessee fan and future U.S. hero, Corey Amick rejoins the podcast for a recap of UGA's offseason, predictions for both the UGA offense and defense, and the weekly Pick 6 segment where Corey and I make our predictions for 6 of this week's biggest college football games, as well as a score prediction for the Georgia-Arkansas game on Saturday. It's going to be a great episode, and it was brought to you by one of the greatest restaurants in Athens, Georgia. The Last Resort Grill at 184 West Clayton Street serves Southwestern-inspired Southern cuisine with exciting tastes that complement the Athens community's distinctive character. When I think Last Resort Grill, I think flavor. And Last Resort Grill has made some exciting new changes to make that flavor accessible to everyone in Athens during this time. If you're looking for a dine-in experience, stop by for dinner Wednesday through Sunday starting at 5 p.m. and enjoy Last Resort's awesome new outdoor garden space. Or if you prefer to pick up, Last Resort Grill is now open for curbside pickup Wednesday through Sunday. You can order from the dinner menu or pick up one of their freshly prepared parchment dishes to be finished at home. Just call 706-549-0810 to place your order and visit lastresortgrill.com to view the full menu, learn more about catering and events, and learn about LRG's Athens community initiatives. The Last Resort Grill is a proud sponsor of the Savage Pads Podcast. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono ain't mono.
He's definitely 6 hour miles, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope climb.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, and you know, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner, and
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I would say that he was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best 2 teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads Podcast. Senior ESPN writer and New York Times bestselling author Mark Schlabaugh is on the line. Mark, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're pumped to have you, Mark. And we're excited for this football season coming up, man. We're coming to the close of what felt like an eternal offseason. Obviously, Georgia fans are incredibly thankful just to have Georgia football, period. But if your predictions on ESPN.com are any indication, this Georgia team may very well be worth the wait for the Bulldog faithful. As of September 13th, you still had Georgia making the college football playoff despite the departure of Jamie Newman. What gives you confidence that this team has what it takes to have a special season?
Let me point out also, I made those predictions before the Big Ten decided they were going to play football this year.
So right.
I need to revisit that.
Right.
Because Ohio State probably grabs one of those 4 spots now. But
yeah,
I'm a big believer in defense. And this is a defense that is talented, athletic, and very deep, particularly at linebacker and on the defensive line. I think he's got a chance to be the best defense Kirby Smart has put on the field. I think the loss of Jamie Newman, who opted out a couple weeks ago, certainly stings. But, you know, with the offensive line they've got coming back and the depth at tailback with Samir White and James Cook and Dewan Edwards, I think you just got to have a guy that, that's not going to get you beat. And mm-hmm. whether that's Dwan Mathis or JT Daniels, mm-hmm. you know, I think as long as they take care of the football and can make some plays, I think they'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, clearly defense is the strong suit for Georgia. And Georgia skeptics will argue that while there are guys like James Cook and Zamir White, there's talent on the offense, that Georgia will have lost too much talent this offseason to truly compete for a playoff spot in a national championship. Between the draft and injury and transfer and opt-out, the Dogs have lost key players at nearly every position. You look at quarterback Fromm and Newman, Swift and Herrien at running back, Cager Blaylock, receiver, Charlie Warner, tight end, both tackles, Kinley and Mays at guard, and we forget about Rodrigo Blankenship as well, but he scored some points for Georgia over the years. With all of those departures, many fans actually still expect improvement from the offense in 2020 due in part to the arrival of offensive coordinator Todd Monken. What are your expectations for his offense in year one at Georgia?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think it's going to look different. I think uh-huh. you'll see guards pulling. I think you'll see toss sweeps. I think you'll see them trying to get the ball in Cook's hands in open space. I think if it's Dwan Mathis, you know, I think he brings more of a dual threat possibility to the equation. He's more mobile than Jake Fromm. I think he's more mobile than Jamie Newman would have been. You know, I think, you know, the big question is, you know, they didn't have a spring practice.
Mm-hmm.
Camp, preseason camp's been a little bit disjointed. So, you know, how much installation have they actually been able to do, and how familiar are these guys going to go be with the system? So I think that, you know, I think that could be a potential pitfall for any team that made a big change in terms of philosophy and system. So we'll just have to see what happens first couple of weeks.
Yeah. Clearly, there's going to be someone different behind center this year, and no position is more important to an offense than that. Quarterback's been the topic of conversation in recent weeks, especially after Newman's departure, as you mentioned. Based on last week's semi-open scrimmage, there's been a lot of speculation about Dwan taking over the reins at QB1, and perhaps he will, but you recently predicted former USC quarterback JT Daniels to be the SEC's best transfer this season. If that comes to be true, he's obviously going to have to play. But can you let Dog fans in on what you know about JT and what he might bring to that offense at Georgia?
Yeah, I think he was a kid. A lot of that was more on potential than anything. Mm-hmm. I had Newman in there and then just swapped out Daniels for
gotcha.
Him. You know, I think Kate Bello at Mississippi State or some other guys would have a possibility. Even Jermaine Burton, Georgia freshman receiver who I've heard a lot of good things about over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
JT was a kid. He graduated early. I think he might have only been 17 when he enrolled, you know, started as a true freshman. Played well for a freshman, you know, in that system. I think he started the opener there, you know, and I thought, you know, played admirably well for a guy that was a true freshman starting at USC.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was the projected starter again and got hurt in the first week, tore his ACL, and hasn't played since. You know, did not know until earlier this week that they had to go back in December mm-hmm. and scope his knee again to clean it up a little bit from the post-ACL surgery. So, that, you know, that's a little bit of a concern. But, you know, I think he's a guy that if it's not this year, you know, maybe it's next year, that he can definitely have some sort of an impact.
Yeah, I gotcha. Well, whether it's JT or Dwan, with at least good quarterback play, it seems like this Georgia team really has a shot at the playoff. You, like we mentioned before, had them in. Now Ohio State, Big Ten are back in the mix. With everything changing and Big Ten playing 8 games, but being able to compete for a playoff spot, how do you feel Georgia's playoff picture has changed?
You know, I think before you could have easily just picked the SEC champ, the Big 12 champ, and the ACC champ. Mm-hmm. You know, if Clemson goes undefeated, as everybody expects, you know, Oklahoma and Texas look like the top 2 teams by far, head and shoulders above everybody else in the Big 12. We'll see how Oklahoma State looks. And then you figured, you know, you get a second team in there. And given the depth of the SEC, you would have thought the SEC had the best chance to get 2 teams in, but I think the addition of the of the Big Ten back into the mix. You know, Ohio State's going to be in there. You know, I think they might be the most talented, if not the most talented, you know, one of the top three, two or three most talented teams mm-hmm. in the country.
Yeah.
But Justin Fields is still there. And I talked to his father, Pablo, a couple of weeks ago, and he said if they ended up playing this fall, that Justin would definitely play. Wyatt Davis, the All-American guard, mm-hmm. opted out. He's talking about coming back. And Sean Wade, the All-American corner who opted out, is talking about coming back as well. So wow. I think Ohio State, you know, is certainly the team to beat. In the Big Ten, you know, Michigan hasn't been able to beat them in 8 or 9 years. Wisconsin lost a bunch of good players. So I think right now I'd probably go Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and Oklahoma, mm-hmm. you know, and if Georgia would have to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game or get two SEC teams in.
Yeah. It's an interesting situation for the College Football Playoff Committee this year because we don't have conferences playing each other. We have every conference playing within the conference, with the exception of some cupcakes for the ACC. We also have a different number of games. So how do you think College Football Playoff Committee members compare teams like Georgia and Ohio State when there is no interconference play and thus no way to truly weigh strength of schedule between conferences?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the most difficult process they've had. It's not apples to apples. Mm-hmm. You know, the ACC's playing 10 games, 9 conference games. SEC's playing 10 conference games. The Big Ten's probably going to play 8 games. You know, if the Pac-12 tries to get back in mid-November, you know, I think you're looking at a max maybe 6 games before the selection committee makes its choices on December 20th. So, I don't know. I think the eye test is probably going to be the biggest factor this year. Mm-hmm. Overall conference depth, which I think would help the SEC. You know, the ACC, Clemson would need Miami, Virginia Tech, Virginia, some other teams to perform maybe better than expected to help the depth in those leagues. But there's going to be a lot of pressure on the committee members, no question about it.
Yeah. Well, Mark, we've talked a lot about this season coming up. I want to transition to another topic, and I'm sure you've hashed out the story quite a few times, but I've been told I can't have Mark Slaybaugh on the show and not discuss Tubby and the pet who you saw run onto Georgia's field from the press box, horrified, and had to explain to Claude Felton that it was yours as a member of the media. Can you hash that out for our listeners who are not familiar with the story?
Yeah, most certainly. I think it was back, it was 97 or 98. Mm-hmm. I think it was 98, Jim Donnan's second year. I lived about 10 blocks from the stadium, had just graduated from Georgia in 96, was working for the AJC as the Georgia beat writer. And Tubby, the chocolate lab, had been a graduation gift from my then girlfriend. And as soon as I got him, I mean, the dog was just, he's a little bit wacko. Like to escape the backyard. We had a fenced-in backyard. Me and my roommates tried to Tubby the thing like 10 times. No matter what, he always seemed to get out. We'd pick him up from Dunkin' Donuts or Compadres or Taco Stand at least once a week. But that particular day, it was raining, and I made sure the back door was locked and so he wouldn't get out and then wouldn't drag mud in the house. But he somehow got out to the front door, I guess, pulled it open with his mouth. Followed some tailgaters to the stadium. Michael Adams, who was the president at the time, told me later that he'd seen Tubby slip in with the red coat marching band right before halftime. And if you've ever been down there on the playing field, there's a chain link fence behind the hedges, and there's only about a 4-foot gap in one spot. And sure enough, he found it, made his way onto the middle of the field. And I think Mike Bobo was the Georgia quarterback, and Robert Edwards was out there. And
wow.
They were trying to chase him, and a couple coaches, Brad Lambert, Mickey Matthews, tried to get him, and he finally took off down the sideline. And I think it was the PA announcer was on the PA going, the dog's at the 30, he's at the 20, and he stepped out of bounds, and everybody booed. But there was an animal control officer in the crowd who came down and picked him up and took him to the pound in the paddy wagon, and I got him out on Monday, and then I had to go to court like a month or two later, and a buddy of mine was the attorney, and we got all the charges dropped, but I'll never forget the judge said, I hate to ask, were there any witnesses? And I said, yes, Your Honor, 86,117. And she just had a big old grin on her face. And I knew that we'd won the case then.
Yeah. Wow. So you're up in the press box doing your job. You think your dog is in the fence of your backyard. And next thing you know, Mike Bobo and Robert Edwards are chasing him down the field. Man, I'm going to have to ask Brooke Whitmire about that one. He comes on the show every year. He would have been the PA announcer at the time. And I can't imagine. I have a dog that's pretty crazy. His name's Rambo, and he lives up to the name. But it sounds like Tubby and Rambo were one and the same in that sense.
Tubby, unfortunately for Tubby, he lost his manhood about 2 days after that little excursion.
Now, what was that related? Was that a punishment of sorts?
That I wouldn't call it a punishment, but I think at that point, he'd interrupted a game on CBS on national television. I'd had dreams of maybe breeding him and selling some puppies, but at that point, I probably figured out he didn't need to be reproduced.
Oh, man. Well, R.I.P. Tubby, a legendary dog whose story will be told for generations, I'm sure, in Athens and beyond Athens. I guess one last question for you, Morgan. This is getting back to football. One of the popular sentiments this offseason has been that Florida is closing the gap on Georgia, that this year's Florida's year to overtake Georgia. Now, clearly from your predictions, you seem to think otherwise. Why do you think Florida has not truly closed the gap? What is keeping Georgia in front of Florida, and how do you expect Georgia to continue in their dominance over Dan Mullen in Jacksonville?
I mean, I think they've closed the gap some. I don't think they've surpassed them. I just think even with what Georgia lost to the NFL draft and, you know, Jamie Newman opting out, I mean, Jamie Newman never took a snap. right. I just feel like Kirby's got the upper hand right now. I mean, he's, for the most part, you know, has had his way with Dan Mullen and Todd Grantham, the defensive coordinator. I mean, he's going back to Mississippi State, you know.
Louisville.
Yeah, Louisville. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's been a pretty lopsided affair. And I think until Mullen can flip the scripts, I'll continue to go with Georgia. But, you know, defensively, I think Georgia is much better. Florida lost the two big defensive linemen. I like Kyle Trask. He did a good job last year when he stepped in. I think he'll be better with another offseason. That's one thing Dan Mullen does well is coach quarterbacks. We've seen that with Dak Prescott and Tebow and some other guys. So I would expect Trask to continue to improve. But, you know, I like Georgia's defense and, you know, they've got the momentum in the series right now. But as we've seen, you know, it can change pretty quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got a little ways till Florida, but Arkansas is right around the corner. What are you keeping an eye on for the Arkansas game? What are you most excited about seeing from this Georgia team?
I mean, I'm happy for Sam Pittman. You know, he was one of the best offensive line coaches in the country for a long time, and he certainly deserves the opportunity. I don't think the SEC did him any favors his schedule, but it's a tough job to begin with. Until Texas A&M was added to the league, they were kind of out there in their own little territory. But the talent level's not good. It was an absolute disaster under Chad Morris, and I think it's going to take two or three years to rebuild the roster, and we'll see what happens. But that's certainly a game that should be pretty lopsided in Georgia's favor, I would think.
Yeah, well, Georgia fans certainly hope so, and we will find out next Saturday. But Mark, again, I appreciate you taking a moment of your time to join us here on this podcast, and longtime reader of yours, so it means a lot that you're coming on, and we'll be keeping up with your stories throughout the season.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I'll be a dog till I die. Woof.
All right. Well, we have had Rodrigo Blankenship and Mark Schlabaugh on the show. Our next guest is longtime friend of the show, reoccurring guest, Corey Amick, former roommate of mine at the University of Georgia.
Corey, welcome back to the Savage Pads podcast.
Thanks, Doug. It's great to be back and definitely great to talk some football again.
Yeah, we've been talking football all year, but it's finally here and it's very exciting. So, Corey, I want to recap this off season for our listeners. Some of them may have forgotten, some of them may have never known, but it was a roller coaster. We had it started off with Cade Mays transferring to Tennessee like right after the bowl game, which was bizarre, and Jake Fromm declaring for the draft along with Isaiah Wilson. And so Georgia fans are thinking, this is the worst offseason ever. We are done, like right in typical Georgia fashion.
Yeah, I think he started off with that, and then, you know, next thing you know, we're in quarantine and COVID happens. And I think some of the key takeaways for me, you know, losing Devon Wilson to UCF, I think it's a big loss.
Yeah.
I think we recover, and then definitely, you know, poor Dominic Blaylock with another bad knee injury.
Killer.
I think that's just something that at this point you just want the best for the kid, and you hope that he can just get healthy enough to come back and be able to play some ball. I think outside of injuries, my favorite for, you know, good and bad offseason stories is, you know, no Uga on the sideline this year. So for some teams like Auburn, that might make things a little bit better, but I'm sure teams like Texas with Bevo are a little upset that they don't get to take another run at Uga. And then obviously the big shocker that happened not too long ago with Jamie Newman opting out, and, you know, whether or not that's going to end up being the right or wrong decision for his career, we don't know. But I think, you know, the bottom line is whatever best for him and his family, and, you know, all the right reasons that he's doing it.
Right.
But perhaps my favorite offseason story outside of UGA is Tathan Martell, at this point, opting out of just criticism in general by basically transferring so many times. And then I guess he just kind of transferred out of football by opting out again.
Yeah.
I feel like he's a new version of Manti Te'o's girlfriend when it comes to college football. Like, we just don't really know.
Yeah, we don't really know. Tate Martell was on QB1, for those of you that aren't familiar, in the same season as Jake Fromm. And it looks like he could get another season of sports. He could be on Last Chance U. Maybe that'll be his next big show. But he was fun to hate on that show. And so I think everyone's enjoying his college career thus far, given that it's been unsuccessful. And he's talked a lot of game and has not backed it up. But who knows? Tate Martell could end up in the SEC at some point. I could see him playing. There's a number of schools. I don't really see George as a fit. I wouldn't like that at all. I would rather pull against that kid any day of the week. But yeah, going back to this offseason, so I mentioned the Cade Mays transfer, Fromm to the draft. Georgia fans are thinking, worst offseason ever. We are done. Then Jamie Newman transfers into Georgia, and all of a sudden we're thinking, Dog fans are thinking, wow, this kid could be the chosen one. He could be the one. And Todd Monken comes in as OC, has had some success in the NFL as well as at the college level. Georgia finishes with the number one recruiting class. And then JT Daniels also transfers in, a former five-star quarterback, even though it seems like Jamie Newman has the job. So at that point, Georgia fans were feeling like, this is our year. So we went from our run is over to this is our year, just like that. Typical Georgia fashion. Then no spring ball. Uncertainty surrounding the season. Like you said, Blaylock's torn ACL. Ringo's out for a while with a shoulder procedure. And it's kind of back to like doom and gloom crowd is back on Twitter doing their thing. But now we're hearing Dwan potentially starting at QB1. There's a lot of talk about Jermaine Burton flashing on offense with Jalen Carter flashing on defense. And Georgia fans are back to, this could be our year, which is my favorite phase of Georgia football. So we're at this could be our year phase going into this Arkansas game. And Corey, I want to make some predictions for the season, so that these are things that we can use on our resume. If they happen, we can be like, yeah, I totally called that. And if they don't, we just kind of forget about it. It's easier to forget these things when they don't happen. But it's also easier to hold them against our doubters when they come correct. So offensive MVP for this season, Corey, who's your pick?
I mean, my heart tells me to lean with Zamir White just because of Georgia's history when it comes to our offensive scheme and the run first offense. But something's telling me this year, just due to the chaos that has been, 2020 and the offseason and no spring ball, that I just feel like we're going to air the ball out a little bit more. And I definitely see George Pickens kind of being our offense MVP this year.
Yeah.
I think it's only a matter of time until Pickens has one of those 12 reception, 180 yard, two touchdown type games where like everything finally comes together. And no matter who's playing quarterback for us this season, our offensive line holds up health wise. And I feel confident that Pickens really stands out as the guy. And I think that'll be big for him as a player, but also for us as a powerhouse program to be able to show, when we get the right guys and when we put them in the right system, like they can really perform. So, I definitely never going to run the ball well, but I'm saying Pickens has this kind of count year, and he had flashes of it last year, but I think this year he really shows just how good he is.
Yeah, I agree. I watched Pickens' presser the other day. That's a mouthful. And George seems to have matured. And I mean, gosh, knock on wood, but the kid seems like he's learned his lesson some under Kirby. He certainly had people in his ear telling him about his potential and what it's going to take for him to have a successful NFL career. And I think he gets it at this point. He's looked phenomenal in his early career. And my big concern with him has been kind of the lack of discipline. And so it looks like he's more disciplined. Kyaris Jackson was saying in his presser that, this is a new Georgia offense. They're going to be scoring lots of points. He was kind of talking big game, which scares me a little bit. But I will say those guys seem confident. I think Monken, like what he did with Mike Evans with the Tampa Bay Bucks, he had the number one passing offense in the NFL with Jameis Winston as QB1. So I do feel like they're going to be airing it out more under him. And I do think Pickens will be the most valuable player on this team as far as being like the most irreplaceable. Cause I think at running back, we're like six deep on guys that can get the job done. Receiver, we've got some talent, but Pickens is generational. And I think he's going to be a huge difference maker for Georgia this year. As far as the offensive breakout player, mine is actually at the same position. I've got Jermaine Burton out of Louisiana. I've heard great things about the kid. Those who are on the vent, UGASports.com, know have read some buzz about Jermaine. And at this point, it's common knowledge on Twitter that Jermaine Burton is flashing. He's been getting some reps with the ones. It looks like he's likely to play in front of a guy like Matt Landers, who's been there for a while, and who we had heard good things about this offseason. So Jermaine Burton is my pick to break out on offense. Corey, who do you have?
Yeah, I love that pick. I definitely see him having a good season. I'm going with Darnell Washington.
So, oh, baby.
I know we had Trey McKitty transfer from Florida State,
right.
And I definitely think if he can stay healthy, he's going to have a big role. But for me, Darnell Washington coming out, I mean, he's such a big body, and I think that having to look on offense, but I don't think that's going to mean that we're moving away from our, classic run down your throat, always having a tight end in the game.
Right.
I think that'll still play a big role.
Yeah.
And I think with Pickens probably getting most of the, the double teams and most of the focus on the secondary, I see a guy like Darnell Washington with his body size being able to catch in like those short passes when a lot of our other receivers are going to have a harder time if they can't create that space.
Yeah.
So I think, if Trey McKitty stays healthy and takes the majority of the snaps, and I think Washington kind of gets to ease into the and kind of dip his toes in the water to get a taste of college ball. But I think if McKitty has any injury issues or just if Darnell Washington kind of makes an early impact in the season, I think he definitely has a coming out party of just like kind of introducing himself to the college football world of being like, I'm 6'7", I can do what I want, and I can go up and get balls when a lot of other guys can't just because of my size and because of my skill set. So I would love to see Darnell Washington kind of break out this season, especially as a freshman, to be able to establish himself as like the next, go-to tight end to come out of UGA.
Yeah, Georgia historically has, and I say historically, I mean in recent history, has underused some very talented tight ends. We've had several of them on the show. Some of them have expressed a little bit of discontent with the play calling in their years at Georgia. I'm hoping for a change in that because it does seem like we're going to have an advantage at that position, a mismatch at that position against most teams. I do know Darnell has dealt with injuries throughout this fall. Not sure exactly his status at the moment, but that's something that someone like Roddy Nabulsi would know and be covering on the vent. But I'll say this, Darnell has the talent, he's got the body, and I think with a young quarterback, regardless of who plays quarterback, with a young quarterback in a new system, it does seem like tight end can be a safety blanket position that, that you can kind of dump it off to with low risk and get some easy completions. So that is one to keep an eye on. On the other side of the ball, Georgia's so loaded on defense. It's scary. Yeah. Azeez Ojulari didn't even make third team All-SEC, which is a joke, but because I honestly think even at just outside linebacker, we've got multiple guys that, that are All-SEC, in my opinion, with Azeez, Nolan Smith, Jermaine Johnson. I mean, it's the list goes on. Adam Anderson. Defensive line is returning quite a few guys. Linebacking core, secondary, I mean, across the board, a lot of experience and a lot of talent. My MVP is Richard LeCount. He's going to be a senior. To me, physically, he looks like an NFL player right now. I definitely think he could have gone pro, and I think he could be playing right now on Sundays. I think he's that good. I think for him, early in his career, it took him a while to learn the defense and to become the disciplined player that Kirby likes to have back there. But he's always had the athleticism. He's always had the leadership qualities. And I think as a senior, he's the most irreplaceable player on that defense as far as what he brings from a leadership standpoint and what he brings as far as commanding the defense and also as a playmaker, as someone with tremendous closing speed and ability, you know, to make plays on the ball and to make some big hits against the run.
Yeah, I love Richard LeCount. I definitely think this will be a good year for him just to kind of perfect his craft when it comes to, you know, last year him and G.R. Reed split that role as the leader of the secondary and kind of, you know, the our own Legion of Boom when it comes to how they play deep. And I think this season he gets to show just how good of a leader he is, as well as, you know, just how well he can play the deep ball. For my defensive MVP, I'm going with Azeez Ojulari. So I think Monty Rice is going to have an outstanding year. Just you look at his stats from last year, he's everywhere. And so I think he's going to have another great year. But I think Azeez is definitely going to kind of take over this season. At how he finished out last year, and he led the team in sacks. He took home, you know, he co-shared the defensive most improved award at the team award ceremony, and then outright won the strength and conditioning award. And so clearly you can see that he's got the respect of his teammates. You know, he's a redshirt sophomore, so he has some experience, but he's still young. But I see just him this season coming out as just one of our go-to pass rushers on the outside. And I won't be surprised if, you know, we see him rocking the Savage Pads a good four or five times this year, creating chaos in the backfield.
Just the thought of that, the thought of the Savage Pads, it's just setting in that it's really going to happen, that we're going to have a season and get to see those come back out. I mean, Lord willing, I don't know, maybe they don't use him this year, but it seems like they probably would. Seems to have been a successful celebratory prop over recent years. I do think Azeez may be the best player on this defense. The reason I did not have him is because of the other talent we have at outside linebacker even. I mean, Nolan Smith and Jermaine Johnson, all three of those guys to me have like first round kind of potential. They are elite. And so it's harder to stand out when you're surrounded by that. And also, obviously, he's a little bit younger than LeCount, although Azeez has been around for 3 years, and he's certainly ready to dominate, I think. I think he's one of the better outside linebackers we've had, and we've had some good ones. So I'm pumped for Azeez as well. On the defensive side of the ball, as far as who breaks out, Ringo was somebody early on I was thinking, but he's had an injury where he's going to be out for who knows how long at this point. Jalen Carter, though, that's the guy. That's the name I keep hearing. I remember watching this high school tape and thinking, wow, this kid is dominating. But you never know with defensive linemen in high school, because they're often going against guys that are like my size, and you don't know how they're going to do when they face someone their own size. But Jalen Carter has caused quite the bit of buzz. I know Coach Donnan is incredibly high on him. I know pretty much everyone that's witnessed him at Georgia's camp has indicated that he's going to be an instant impact player, which is rare on the defensive line, and has me thinking this may be the Derrick Brown that we finally get. Corey, who's your breakout player on defense?
I'm right there with you. I think, you know, we have the experience on the line. You know, we have Tonte Wyatt, Julian Rochester, Jordan Davis, and I think Jalen Carter brings a lot to that group, especially how frequently we rotate those guys.
Right.
And I think just the video, I think, came out a few weeks ago that leaked from practice of Jalen Carter going against Trey Hill and, you know, in the ring, and it was just, you know, pure force of those two guys. And you look at Jalen Carter as a freshman being able to do what he did.
With Trey Hill. And Trey Hill's no slouch.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, you look at UGA, especially since the Kirby era, you know, began, and it's like our linebacking core has been the best in the nation. And I think Jalen Carter can kind of start that train of showing that, you know, the big uglies down low can get back into that, you know, conversation of being like just as much of problem causers as our linebackers are. And I'm definitely excited for him to be so young and to have that much talent, and definitely just have the guys around him that have a few more years of experience to kind of help get him to his potential. But I can see him breaking out this year and just causing a lot of chaos for teams in the middle of the field.
Yeah, it's exciting to think about this defense because, like you said, we've had the best linebackers, and we still do, in my opinion. Defensive line has always been the perceived weakness, although last year they performed exceptionally well. You got a young guy like Trayvon Walker that people are forgetting about, and then now you have a young guy like Jalen Carter and obviously Davis the year before Walker. So that's 3 years in a row getting a pretty significant instant impact player on the defensive line. If that trend continues, the Dogs are going to be in good shape for a long time on the defensive line. And in the secondary, we've gotten Campbell, we've gotten Ringo. I mean, Ringo is the top defensive back in his class. So it's looking like they might just be defense you. And with Kirby Smart as head coach, you know, that's certainly no surprise, but it's certainly encouraging to see. It feels like if the offense can just be decent, that Georgia will always have a shot. And if the offense is great, then they could be phenomenal. So that's kind of the state of Georgia football right now. I think the big question mark, like I kind of inferred a moment ago, is the offense. New offensive coordinator, no spring camp, young quarterback, new quarterback, probably, I don't know, 10 new starters. A lot of question marks, and yet there's this feeling that they can be better than they were a year ago with Jake Fromm and with you know, 2 first-round tackles. I don't know that those expectations are fair for a new offensive coordinator, but I understand the sentiment. I think they underperformed with a lot of talent in recent years, and I think there's no reason to think that the talent they have now can't get the job done with the proper play calling.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll add, and this is more of a fun one, but, you know, you see Storm Duck over at UNC getting a lot of hype for his name, and I think, you know, Major Burns is definitely in that contention for name of the year when it comes to college football. So
Major Burns,
I'm excited to see him hit the field.
I will say that name can go one of two ways. If he earns a reputation for shutting guys down, it'll just sound like he's fast. But if he's on the bad part of a few highlights for some other teams, I do think the name Major Burns could come back to bite him. I definitely see that one trending on Twitter at some point, just purely because so many people are like, oh, that's ironic. Yeah, I like that name, though. It's like DeAndre Swift. You just feel like when you got a name that good, you pretty much are going to be a good athlete. Parents out there, if you're having children and you want your children to be good athletes, it's all in the name. It's all in how you name them. And Major Burns' parents, just like DeAndre Swift's, they got it right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, next segment is our pick six segment with an extra point at the end. The pick six is when we pick games, 6 games to be specific, if you couldn't already guess that. And then the extra point is the Georgia game, and we picked the score for that one. So this week, we're going to fly through these. None of these games are, like, crazy interesting, but it is college football, and this is kind of like our way of doing the kind of college game day thing where we get to pick them, we get to compete with one another, and we get to talk about college football outside of just Georgia, because over the course of the season, we're going to see some of these teams. Georgia's going to potentially be competing for playoff spots with some of these teams, and it's nice to have a conversation about them and kind of keep it going throughout the season. It benefits the overall discussion. So, Corey, first game, number 23, Kentucky. 23, Kentucky. That's crazy to me. At number 8, Auburn. The home field advantage isn't as much of an advantage, but we're still going to say where the game's taking place. So, 23, Kentucky at number 8, Auburn. What's your pick, Corey?
So, Tigers are 10-point favorites here. I'm just not convinced Bo Nix is Auburn's guy.
Really?
I'm excited to see Terry. Yeah, I after his last season, I mean, if he comes out of the season and performs, then I'll be like, okay, this is right. But for me, I just don't know. And so for me personally, with Kentucky, I'm excited to see Terry Wilson at quarterback, senior season. Obviously, I think their offense will be a little bit better since they're not going to have a wide receiver calling the plays all year long.
Yeah.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
I don't expect them to pull off this upset, but I do think that Kentucky covers the spread but still loses in a 9-point game.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going with Auburn as well. I didn't even look at the spread. I'm not a gambler, Corey. We're not promoting that. No, but I should be because last year my picks were pretty solid. I'll have to go back and find the stats, but I remember looking at it and saying, like, dang, I should put money on these games. I've got Auburn winning. I do think Bo Nix is the guy at Auburn. I think Auburn, obviously, we have them next week, and they lost quite a bit on the defensive line, which is just a huge relief because I'm so sick of playing Derrick Brown and company, Marlon Davidson. But at the same time, they've recruited extremely well there. They've got a returning quarterback, which is rare for the better teams in the SEC. Between LSU,
yeah,
Alabama, Georgia, you know, Florida and Auburn are the two with the returning quarterbacks. I will say Bo Nix had his ups and his downs his freshman year. I personally think – I don't think he's Cam Newton, but I think he can get the job done with the right play calling. And I think last year, if you watch that Georgia-Auburn game, they – first off, Georgia should have won that game by 40 points, okay? But given that Georgia let Auburn back into that game, Auburn had so many opportunities. Like, they should have won that game, and their fans feel that way. If they had not just made stupid mistakes, stupid play calls, trick plays on 4th-and-1 when they were running for 4 yards to carry, Bo Nix missing a wide-open running back on a 4th-down pass, just things like that it's like, I don't expect that to happen again. Gus Malzahn is no longer calling plays, and I will forever miss his ridiculous trick play. I mean, he ran every Georgia-Auburn game. He ran a trick play that blew up in his face, and it was like some high school play, which is kind of what he's known for. But now that there's a changing the guard play calling, I don't expect that anymore, which scares me because it's like Auburn beats themselves more often than you beat Auburn, and now they're not going to beat themselves. Oh, yeah. We're going to have to beat them. So anyway, Auburn's one to keep an eye on, obviously, with them coming up next week. Next game, ACC action, Florida State, who has been disappointing so far this year, at number 12, Miami, with De'Eriq King.
All right, so, yeah, this is the game day game, so I'm sure we'll get all the replays from the 90s and the early 2000s about how great the rivalry is and how, you know, tonight's game is going to be a repeat of those. And I'm expecting a slaughter on the field. I think Mike Norvell is not going to be allowed to be there because of COVID, and I don't think that's going to change much. After how Florida State started the season, blowing that 13-point lead to Tech, I mean, I don't really have any confidence in them to finish out a meaningful game. So I definitely think Manny Diaz and the Hurricanes take this one by at least 2 touchdowns, and I think they kind of go ahead and put the nail in the coffin when it comes to Florida State having any hope for, you know, reclaiming their status this season.
Yeah, I got Miami as well in that one. Florida State, I don't know. They're one of those teams where it's like, yeah, they could probably beat Miami. I've watched Miami because there hasn't been SEC football, and it's weird because they beat ranked teams, but it's like both teams always look bad to me. De'Eriq King's an athlete for sure, and he very well could have ended up at Georgia, I think. That was something that Georgia fans were excited about at one point. Regardless, I think Miami is less bad than Florida State. I don't think either team's very good. Next game, this is the toughest pick for me. Number 16, Tennessee, your former team, as those who've listened to the show previously know, at South Carolina. South Carolina, obviously, Will Muschamp. He's changed starting quarterback, so Hilinski is not starting. 16, Tennessee, Pruitt, year two. They got Cade Mays potentially cleared. Their fans feel like they're going to do this year what Georgia did in 2017, which is surprise the world in a coach's second year. What do you think about Tennessee at South Carolina?
So this is my first upset of the SEC season, and my reasoning is everything points to Tennessee being able to, you know, pull out this game and start their season off on the right foot with all the expectations.
Right.
But I think that's exactly why they're going to lose the game. I think it's going to be sloppy. I think, you know, either Jared Garantano or Brian Maurer, whoever starts this game, I think there's going to be some sloppy turnovers in the first half, and you expect to see both quarterbacks make an appearance. I think South Carolina, with the quarterback switch, regardless of who's throwing the ball, I think Shai Smith on the outside has a big game for the Gamecocks. And, you know, Will Muschamp's going to be in his full wet dog form, even though it's probably going to be in the 70s. He's been starting so late. And I think South Carolina starts their season off with a big upset win.
Wow, that would certainly shake things up in the SEC East early on. I'm sticking with Tennessee on this one purely because I personally think that Jeremy Pruitt is a phenomenal defensive coach. I think he's going to have his defense playing some pretty good ball. As far as the offense, who knows? I mean, I think Cade Mays could be a nice addition for them if he gets to play. Quarterback situation's up in the air. Maurer had his moments last year. We pretty much already know all we need to know about Garantano.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's kind of an unknown. I mean, it's going to be a Jim Chaney offense. You already know what they're going to do every play. But regardless, they've been recruiting well on the offensive line. They've certainly, I mean, Pruitt's done a lot of the things that Kirby was doing early on, which has their fan base feeling a certain way. I don't think they're going to be that good. I am concerned about them as far as when Georgia plays them. I'll take them over South Carolina. 22 Army. Corey, you are a former ROTC guy. 22 Army at 14 Cincinnati. I'll say it. I personally haven't watched either one of these. I think I watched Army for a little bit. I'll take Cincinnati just based on the fact that I guess whoever ranked them probably knew what they were doing.
I'm definitely a little biased here, but fun fact, Army is the number one ranked independent team in the FBS as of week 3. So you can thank Notre Dame
going
for
all the way.
Joining the ACC this season to help that. But
yeah,
and you can't deny that they're the number one independent team. I mean, the Cincinnati's big favorites in this one, but I'm going to go with my gut and say their Army grinds out a low-scoring win on the road.
Nice. I would love to see it. I never mind watching Army win football games. They just seem like that team that always gets close to pulling the upset. And I feel like we talked about this last year and just can't quite do it. So that's kind of how I see this one going. We'll see. Mississippi State at 6, LSU. Mississippi State with the Stanford quarterback coming in. LSU replacing Joe Burrow, replacing practically an entire NFL team if you look at the amount of guys that were drafted off of that team. So they're still ranked really high, number 6 right now. I don't know what the basis of that is if you're looking at current players. So to me, this one's a little closer than it is as far as the rankings, but I'm still picking LSU.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with LSU. As of right now, I'm not a believer in the LSU hype this year. I think they'll take care of business the first 2 or 3 games of the season, but the big thing for me is the LSU-Florida game at the end of October. That's circled on my calendar just to kind of see which of those two is a bigger fraud, because I definitely think one of them is this season, and I just can't tell who it is until I see a few weeks of gameplay. But I think they're both kind of riding off the historical and recency bias when it comes to their ranking and with how much hype they're getting nationally.
Yeah, I certainly feel that way about LSU. They've recruited well, but to be a contender this year after what they lost, it's hard to imagine. I know an LSU fan that was telling me he would rather have Miles Brennan at quarterback than Justin Fields. I think that's insane. We'll see, though. I would have thought that was insane if he said the same thing about Joe Burrow last year going into the season and turned out to be true. So we'll see. A lot of unknowns at quarterback in the SEC. A lot of unknowns at a lot of positions for LSU. Last game we're picking before Georgia, 24 Louisville at 21 Pitt. Corey, what's your pick here?
I'm taking Pittsburgh. I think Pat Narduzzi is the guy for Pittsburgh, and you know they've obviously upset Clemson, but I think I think this season for them is going to be a big step forward in the program, and I don't think they're going to drop a game early on, even with a closer level opponent like Louisville. So I think Pittsburgh wins it, and I think they win it by at least a touchdown.
Yeah, I'm going with Pitt as well. We'll see, though. I mean, that one's kind of, who knows, between between Louisville and Pittsburgh. When you get up into the 20s, especially right now with the Big Ten teams not in the fold, it's practically two unranked teams. So we'll see what happens there. Extra point, number four, Georgia at Arkansas. So, Corey, the goal here is to see who can guess closest on the score. I'm not going to say what I'm thinking. I'm going to let you do your thing. And let's see. I'm typing in my score here. I like to have it. See how it looks. Make sure it looks right.
Yeah.
Okay. I got mine ready to roll.
All right. So I'm preparing myself for a slow start offensively, and I'm gonna take that as it is, and kind of swallow my pride and accept that we're having a lot of changes this season. But at the same time, I expect our running game to get going. I expect Zamir White. I think he comes out as kind of a game MVP, scores at least one, maybe two touchdowns, and has 100 yards on the ground or more.
Yeah.
I think we'll see, at least two, if not three quarterbacks take snaps just for the sake of game experience. And my score is 38-6. Arkansas doesn't score a touchdown. They get a couple field goals late, maybe one first half, one in the second half. But I think our offense does enough early in the game to kind of show, like, we're going to take control of this and we're going to win.
Yeah.
But I think kind of similar to the Vanderbilt game last year, like, we don't necessarily put up 50 points just because we start rotating guys in earlier than we arguably should.
Yeah, my pick is so close, and this happened so often last year with Caleb and me, but my pick, and I typed this before you said that, my pick is 34-3. So you said 38-6. I said 34-3. Part of the low scoring for me, relatively low. Of course, we could end up in a game where we're like, wow, we were thinking it was going to be a blowout. And here we are in a close game. You never know. I mean, we have a pretty much entirely new offense. So and it's 2020. Crazy stuff happens. Hopefully not to us. Hopefully we are the ones causing crazy things to happen against teams like Alabama. I think offensively, Georgia can get it done at will in this game. Just purely based on gut, purely based on the amount of talent I know we have and the struggles Arkansas has had, having watched them last year. I do know Georgia's got a big couple games coming up with Auburn, Tennessee, Alabama, and I don't know that Kirby wants to show all of his cards if he doesn't have to. And so I think as much as fans want to see Georgia light up the scoreboard and score 70 points in game number one, air the ball out like crazy, I think they call a very vanilla game. I think fans are complaining on Twitter this weekend, saying nothing's changed about James Coley. This is just my prediction. But I do not expect Georgia to just roll out the entire playbook and put it out there for Auburn and Tennessee and Alabama to see in week one. Week two, different story because out of necessity. But week one against Arkansas, I think Kirby knows he can likely get the job done with a pretty basic game plan, and I think that's kind of the Kirby smart way.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. I think regardless, I'll be happy to get out of week one with a comfortable win and hopefully no injuries.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you can ask for in week one. Obviously, we'd like to see at quarterback. Quarterback's been the big talk this offseason. Dwan Mathis, JT Daniels. JT's not technically cleared yet. Kirby says he thinks he will. I know people who think he won't. We'll see what happens with JT, but regardless of who starts at quarterback, we have no Georgia fans have no certainty as to what quarterback performance could be like. You know, this could be like the year where we had Grayson Lambert and Fatone Bata and Bryce Ramsey. You know, those years where you just don't have a guy that has everything you need. Some people think Dwan's going to go win the Heisman, or some people think JT's going to be that guy. He's going to be a first-round pick next year. So there's so much uncertainty at that position. It would be incredibly difficult for either of them, in my opinion, in a new offense to have it absolutely down pat. I think that's what most people are keeping an eye on is the quarterback position and the quarterback play. Because I personally, I'll believe it when I see it with any of them. I tend to be a skeptic, and I'm like, until I've seen that I can trust a quarterback, a young quarterback specifically, I will have my concerns going into a game like Auburn or a game like Tennessee or Alabama as far as quarterback play is concerned. So that's probably the biggest concern of mine going into this one and thing that I really want to see. If it's Dwan, I think he's going to be like a quarterback, like game manager who's an athlete, like who can make plays on with his legs if he needs to. That's what I expect them to ask of him. I know a lot of people think, oh, he's an athlete. He's going to go out there and be a gunslinger. Maybe so. But if I know anything about Kirby Smart, it's that his goal is to not turn the ball over offensively. And so I think he takes a guy like that, uses his athleticism, but is very conservative in his use of it. And so I expect kind of more of a game manager type quarterback play this year. But we'll see. Like I said, it's 2020. Nobody knows what's going to happen.
That's right.
All right, well, that wraps up episode 2 of season 3 of the Savage Pads podcast. For those of you listening, we appreciate it. Please subscribe on the streaming service of your choice and follow along this year. We'll be having more shows like this every single week. So thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week after watching our first week of Georgia football. Thank God, and go Dawgs.